Hello.
Happy Mother's Day.
Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. What's going on?
Stuff.
So you sound like you had a good interview the other day.
I had two good interviews last week. I have three that are scheduled for this week. Two that are scheduled for this week so far.
Okay.
One is a follow-up from one from last week.
That's good.
Yeah, things are looking up.
The only thing that could be better is if they call you up. How much money can we throw at you? Yeah, right. We can't survive without you.
I'm that should be interesting. I don't have a first one is a Wednesday, another one Thursday.
Bidding war.
The Wednesday one I know I can dress down for. Thursday, because I go to my interviews, at least the first one, always.
Mm-hmm.
Not suit and tie, but, you know, nice shirt and tie and stuff. But the guys who interviewed me were in jeans and t-shirt. So mm-hmm. I'll just go in with, you know, a pair of slacks and a nice shirt.
So I was thinking about interviews and whatnot, and I was surprised to find out in Pennsylvania you could actually choose to hire someone or not on if they smoke.
Really?
Yeah, you're allowed.
Huh.
So I was thinking in interviews, I'm wondering if you would be beneficial to, you know, let it out there that you don't smoke, that you've lost 50-some pounds, you know, those kinds of things. Just because there is a stigma against hiring a big fat guy, you know? And, you know, maybe if you let some of those things out there, I wonder if it would give you
a big a fat guy.
Well, I'm just saying, not as big as you used to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just saying, you know, like the smoking thing and whatnot. I'm wondering if, you know, you might get some extra, you know, momentum if you like kind of let those kind of things air out.
It came up in one interview.
Did it?
Well, just when I was going, one place took me out to eat, and mm-hmm. so
okay,
we had to talk about, you know, my restrictions. Mm-hmm. So that happened.
Yeah, but they could, you know, I was surprised, but yeah, if you could ask someone, do you smoke? And you're perfectly within your rights to not hire them because they're a smoker.
Hmm. I know that at National Church there was a policy of no smoking on the grounds.
Mm-hmm.
So you couldn't even walk outside to smoke. You had to right. be.
But, you know, I mean, just think, you know, I think many managers, unless the manager smokes, would appreciate a person who's not going to be taking, you know, several breaks a day
yeah.
to go outside and smoke, you know. Even if they break their allotted breaks in other ways, you know, I'm sure there's...
I'm applying for a professional position. Mm-hmm. There's no breaks or non-breaks. It's not about hours, you know. It doesn't matter, you know. It's a position that you take breaks when you want to, you come in when you want to, you leave when you want to, you get the work done. That's the...
No, I understand. I mean, I was just thinking about this and, you know...
I mean, that may apply for certain other positions, but not for positions that I'm applying to.
Okay.
It's kind of funny because, you know, I look around and I see lots of help wanted signs, you know, but for minimum wage jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's against my interests to go do one of those jobs because I'm getting paid more in unemployment than twice as much, at least, in unemployment than I would mm-hmm. if I took one of those jobs. So it's, you know, so my interest is to keep pumping out resumes and getting interviews and see what happens.
There was a thing on Freakonomics, I think it was, talking about how, you know, there's, It's so weird because you hear about one thing. Well, there's all these open, like at my job, we have close to a dozen positions, you know, that we just can't find great people to fill. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not the talent out there or talent's being retained by other companies. And then, you know, there's the people that can't find the jobs, but there's also the ones that are taking jobs that are lower than what they might be qualified for or what, you know, they're going down and they're pushing everyone down, you mm-hmm. know, and they were talking about how that depresses the whole ladder. Right. And then the people, you know, where it hurts is the people at the bottom, right.
Mm-hmm.
They can't get those mid-level jobs because they're taken up by people that you know, have gotten degrees and whatnot that should get them higher ranking jobs, right? You know, they're so the job that your education is supposed to get you is be taken up by someone with more education. You know, because they can't get the jobs at their education level. They're talking about how the whole thing is being pushed down.
Well, it's a shitty job market right now and a shitty economy. Mm-hmm. That's and the whole big lie is this job creator nonsense. They're making money. The economy is growing, but the people who, you know, you and me, and below, we're making less money than ever before, and the people on top are making much more money than ever before.
Mm-hmm. Like the one example I remember clearly now is guy got out of college with a bachelor's degree, wanted to get a research position, and he was applying for a position that people with PhDs were applying to, you know, and this, it was an entry level research position. You know, the PhDs had no right in applying to it because, you know, they had to because they had nothing else to go for. And that's just kind of like, ugh, like, how are you, like, it doesn't make sense to get the PhD if you're only going to apply for an entry-level research position, you know.
there's a serious economic problem. I mean, what is the principle, or what is economics trying to solve?
Mm-hmm.
Right, economics is trying to solve, I think it's safe to say economics is trying to solve how to get the most equitable distribution of limited resources.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that these the policies of, you know, supply side economics have failed miserably at the equitable part of that game. They certainly have, it certainly has given, you know, increased the size of the economy, but all the money goes on top and the money doesn't trickle down, mm-hmm. as the old saying goes. So. And we've seen a huge discrepancy in the wealth factor. So right.
Along those lines, they were talking about the salary breakdown of Congress, you know, Congress,
right.
Judicial branch, the executive branch, all those, the salary breakdown versus how it compares to the country as a whole. And, you know, there's a book, got the author of the book, I think the book was called White Collar Congress. And talking about how, you know, there's like less than 2% of Congress has a working man salary type thing, you know, like making like what we make, right? Or, you know, they're not, you know, where they don't have their capital gains, mm-hmm. you know, outpacing their income type thing, you know, that kind of salary type thing. And, you know, and they're talking about how, you know, so the Democrats are generally for more for the working man, the blue collar man, but they're not the blue collar men. So they don't really look at it the same way. They, you know, if you got, you know, Joe the plumber, you know, he was a Republican, but, you know, bad, horrible example because he was a nut job, but I'm just trying to think of someone else who's just been a working man, who's a run for Congress type thing. You know, they would have different outlooks on things because they're working for their money instead of, you know, investing for their money and things like that. But, you know, it's not a new thing. In 1900, the percent of Congress that was a working man was 2%.
Yeah,
so
no,
it's never changed.
The problem now, or at least, you know, the way I look at the problem is that the unfortunate problem is that these economic ideas have become dogma. And so it's now a faith-based issue. It's not a matter of, you know, evidence doesn't matter. This is how it's supposed to work because, you know, this is the pure way. This is the way it's supposed to work. It doesn't matter that evidence shows it doesn't work. It's supposed to work and it will. This is how things should be.
Mm-hmm.
And that got us into problems in the 70s. From on the Democratic side, it's getting us into problems now on the Republican side. I don't know what to do, but there's nothing I can do about it. I can complain on my little radio show. And that's about it.
Not much of a bully pulpit, is it?
No.
Okay.
And I don't have the answers, so me complaining isn't going to, you know,
yeah.
Yeah, you guys.
So, I heard an interesting thing and they didn't really get into this topic, but it kind of, they just got the spark going for me. And that is aging. And, you know, evolution doesn't care about you after you've had your kids. And talk about kinds of cancer that, you know, like, don't manifest themselves until...
Well, your genes don't care about you after you had your kids.
Yeah.
Evolution doesn't care about anything.
Right.
It's just a process.
Oh, that's what I meant.
And, but that's not, but it should be noted that your that there are other species besides humans that take care of their old in different ways. You know, primates and things and some larger mammals.
But they're talking about kinds of cancer that, you know, like stomach cancer and stuff, don't hit you until you're in your 40s or 50s or whatnot.
Right.
And the guy suggested maybe there's evolutionary pressure to get you off the stage. And I'm thinking, you know, with limited resources, you know, your genes want your younger version of your genes to thrive. Mm-hmm. So there might actually be pressure to kill you off when you're past, you know, fertility, than just letting you live out your days.
It's a reasonable hypothesis. I think it's one that is sort of under consideration in evolutionary studies, which is the reason why mortality is a constant feature of life, is because, like you said, if it wasn't, then the process of evolution would—it's another economics issue.
Yeah, exactly.
You're dealing with limited resources.
Yes, I like how that tie in. You know, yeah. I was going to say it if you didn't. You know, exactly, because the genes are trying to manage the resources. Mm-hmm. You know, again, it's just a hypothesis, but it certainly is a logical one where you can see that I'm in this hunter-gatherer thing. You know, where humans spend a very long time of their evolutionary history, right, and it's not easy to come by food and whatnot. So, you know, as soon as you're done having kids, stop eating, you know, get them out of here. It certainly is a logical one. You know, again, doing the rigor to actually test that one, be a little bit beyond our scope.
The other thing that's logical about it is sort of the reason why it feels right is it fits in with a story structure very well. It really does. I mean, it's you know, story structures are all about life, death, rebirth. You know, it's light, dark, light, you know, the circle things. But Campbell gets into it about how, you know, that's actually
right.
Part of the deal is you know, we look at the world like that. This is the way that the world seems to work for everything around us, so we adapt all the way that we tell stories to that.
Yeah, but there's two different things. The thing that I thought was like, whoa, the thing that really struck me was, you know, I always could understand there'd be no reason to prevent cancer. But what if you've actually evolved a proclivity to get cancer, you know, like to clear you off the stage, right? Mm-hmm. Like actually you are predetermined, or, you know, I guess predetermined is actually a term they use, right? But, you know, that was actually involved into it, you know, the societies that kill off, you know, that where the elders die sooner gives more resources to the youngers, and that gives a whole advantage to the whole stream, you know?
Well, it gives an advantage in some sense, but you would have to say that it doesn't necessarily work for humans, because we still find that this way society is built around humans, the mind is the most important resource for...
You gotta get your time scales right, you know? I could definitely see if someone could still farm a field, right? But even farming might be too recent, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, we're always evolving.
Yeah, but, you know, farming might even be too recent. So like, go back beyond that when you're just gathering.
I don't know. Right? I mean, we can evolve pretty quickly, and evolution can go glacially, and it can also go pretty quickly. We're not going to grow new limbs, but certain things can be selected for relatively quickly.
Did we talk about the autism and the gut bacteria thing?
It sounds familiar.
Okay. There was a study showing that autistic people tend to have a certain kind of flora in their gut.
Right.
And flora, fauna?
It'd be flora.
Flora. Yeah, flora in their gut. And they didn't say it, you know, this is the speculation part. But wouldn't it be something? Wouldn't it be fucking insane if toxins from these bacteria is what causes... It's not a causation. You know, this is just speculation.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not saying anything, but wouldn't that be fucking crazy if your gut bacteria made you autistic?
We're starting to learn so much more about how the stomach is, you know, like the second brain, and how what goes on in there really does influence your decisions.
That, yeah, all kinds of things. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, well, you know, the amount, we talked about this recently, the amount of material, living material in and on your body that is not your DNA is about 3 pounds of material, as much as your brain, you know, mm-hmm. So.
And if you were to count the individual cells, there are many, many more cells
mm-hmm.
of stuff that's not you, that's right. Riding you.
Yeah.
Than that is you.
Riding you, maybe even, like you said, controlling you, yeah. You know? They're in there calling the shots.
It's
like that Woody Allen sex thing where you got the little people, like, running the body and, you know, but that's the bacteria in your stomach.
It's not unprecedented because we know of lots of situations, you know, where funguses can take control of insects.
Mm-hmm. And, zombie ants, yeah.
And even different, you know, do parasites take control? There's that thing with cats, and they're...
Oh, right.
That passes to humans sometimes.
Yeah, there's a parasite in cats that leads to suicidal tendencies in humans. And the theory is that this... It's beneficial to the cats to pass this on to humans, so the cats can eat the humans when they kill themselves.
I don't know about that. That's a little wacky.
I don't think I made that up. I think that was actually in the.
Yeah, you know, it very well may be, but it does sound a little wacky. I think it's in. I don't know if one could show that to be how you'd show that to be the actual benefit of the situation, because
you lose your caregiver. Yeah, so. Like, but you know, domesticated cats again are relatively new in the scale of things.
Yeah,
but yeah, so I don't know, but for the parasite, there's definitely a you have to, you know, they need to get into the next host body, right? So if it's not going to be from making the human kill themselves. And,
well, but the parasite doesn't actually know it's making the human kill itself.
Right.
It's doing...
It's evolved to, hey, this works.
Yeah, right. It does something, and that so it doesn't... Parasite's not like, oh, okay. It's not... doesn't have a conscious mind. It's thinking, mm-hmm. I got to get into this human, and I got to wire him up. So it's doing something, and that something is giving humans a slightly more proclivity to suicidal depression.
Right.
Why, you know, maybe it's just that it sees the cat, maybe it does something to the cat, and we've started to domesticate cats, and so it sees us as another possible vector, and it doesn't look at us any differently than the cat, mm-hmm. but it does something to, but what it does to the cat does suicidal depression to us.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that it necessarily has evolved to do this. So it could kill the
person. Oh, no, but it found something that works for it, you know? Or maybe it's just a side effect of the whole thing, I guess. But, yeah, so I'm going to, I mean, I don't know, keep an eye on that autism space, because, I mean, we're learning so much about the gut. And, like I said, it's wild speculation only on my part, but that would just be insane if it was, like, some kind of toxin from bacteria that, you know, that found out that, you know, that was the whole thing. That's a hell of a stretch on causation and correlation, or
yes.
What's that, you know?
Correlation does not equal causation.
Right.
Basis.
Right.
And there's a sorry.
Someone wants you.
We could go for hours on this.
Yeah, we could.
So I don't want to, you know, get into it because.
Did you hear about the Mars One reality show?
Yeah, they want people to.
Some Danish company is taking applications to join a reality show where you get to take, I believe, a one-way trip to Mars. I think it's one way.
Yeah.
and you join a team of like 9 people, and it's, they'll whittle down these teams down to one team over like an 8-year process or something like that. So you have to be the kind of person who wants to go to Mars and has nothing better to do for the next 8 years.
Well, I mean, if you're going to Mars to die, you know, you'll live there for however long the colony lasts and die on Mars, unless someone decides to build a, you know,
a life raft to go get you.
Yeah.
An ark or something.
Or, because you know, you're not going to be able to fabricate a way back once you're there. So if people are like that, then I don't see any. Yeah, the weird thing is, like, if you look at the plans for the mission, the mission is a reality show. They plan to have full 24-hour streams of the people going to Mars.
So are they going to cast assholes? So it's good TV.
I don't know, but it is Big Brother like writ across the solar system
and across people's lives.
It's such a,
this is Truman Show. I mean, not Truman Show. I mean, but it's like, you know, from then to death. It's just so crazy.
It's an absolutely bizarre thing that
just might work.
That because there's the,
it'll subsidize science. I mean, hopefully there's some science. There's got to be some science. But.
Well, this is the interesting thing about this, and about, I think, you know, how this relates even way back to craft beer and relates back to the economic situation. Part of the problem is that the economy is changing, and people need to find new ways to make money, new ways to develop content, to develop things, to generate wealth, and this is, Mars One is one of them. Craft beer is another way that people are finding to, you know, that suits them better, and it gives, you know, gives more opportunity.
Mining Bitcoin.
there's all these things that are opening up, and we don't know, who knows which ones will stick around. There's another evolutionary thing right there.
So, you know, Mars One has to be good TV, right, to pay the bills. And you would have to think science probably has to suffer at that point, right? So they gotta get the Big Brother.
I don't know. It could be that the best way to subsidize science turns out to be to make it into an entertainment. Par entertainment, at least. And
the Jersey Shore on Mars. How's science going to get done when they cast the people that are going to make, you know, dramatic TV, though? But I guess you can, right? But again, we're talking about, you know, the economics, right? Getting your biggest return, you know, being able to get the funds to run this crazy expensive mission.
I mean, it's not necessarily about getting the biggest returns. You want to get returns to pay for your investment. I mean, you would like it to be big. But as long as you have returns to get that pay for your investment, then, you know, as long as you're in the black, you're good. So, yeah, I don't think these people are trying to make it the entertainment event of the millennia. I think they're just trying to make it pay for itself and
gotcha, you know,
stuff. Yeah, so, they don't want to make it the new Olympics, I think.
They had, like, 70,000 applications, and the application process isn't free. I think if you're, depending on the wealth of your home country, depends on how much your application fee is.
Right.
And I think Americans have to pay like $40 or something like that to apply. And, you know, they got tens of thousands of applications. So they're already making money. Not enough to get some people to Mars, but,
you know, there are plenty of people that I would happily say, yeah, go to Mars. Get off this planet, please. Find a whole other planet to ruin.
If I was, I don't know, a little bit more adventure. I mean, with a family and whatnot, no. That ship has sailed for me, but, you know.
Well, you like camping. So you like the whole outdoorsy, and what is more ultimately outdoorsy than going camping on another planet, right?
Well, it's getting to do the science and whatnot. I mean, I think it would be cool. I would, at the right time in my life, I would have signed up for a one-way mission to Mars. Maybe not, I may not have signed up for an 8-year whittling down process of a bunch of different teams on a reality show. Wouldn't have signed up for that. But, I would have applied and, if I had much better odds of actually going when I got accepted, I think it would have been in the cards at some point. But, I never had the education for NASA to select me to do such a thing.
The question I have about the reality show is it a situation where it's a competition, obviously, but we're just spectators, or is there a voting thing involved? If there's a voting thing involved, then the whole thing's bullshit, as far as I'm concerned. Because
I'm not sure
the public does not have the collective intelligence is not quite the right word, but cannot collectively pick out someone in a popularity contest for a position that is anything but.
Right. I mean, the psychological profile is going to be hugely important.
Yes.
Because you're going to have a lot of, if you had a lot of normal people go on this trip, a lot of them would go crazy, mm-hmm. right? You need some people that aren't going to go crazy.
No, if it's sort of like a Survivor thing where there's no voting,
mm-hmm.
at least from our end.
Right.
Or even, it could, American Idol, but there's no people voting.
Just experts
voting, right? As long as it's that, then okay. But once it gets to the point where people are voting, then it just...
America's Got Talent.
Yeah.
Mars Got Talent.
America's Got Martians.
Okay. Penguins won last night in overtime. Moved on to the second round of the playoffs.
Yay! I was asleep. I was exhausted. That's why I couldn't do a show last night.
So I had you get me the Revolution, the second part of the first season. I haven't watched that yet, but I started watching The Americans from FX. That's a pretty good show.
I've heard.
Show about, and it's set in 1981, at least the first season, and they're the deep, deep cover Russian spies living in America. And, completely taking on American identities and whatnot. And it's pretty good. It's, FX and, the cable channels have learned what they can get away with. And, they're showing, not visual depictions of sexual things, but they're showing, they get away with a lot. And then the whole spy thing is very, I think it's been, I'm like three episodes in, four episodes in, and it's very well done. I can, I'm going to tear through this season and be waiting for the second one, I think.
I'm pushing up to you Game of Thrones. Okay. So
I have... Actually, you don't have to. I have everything but the last season.
Too late.
All right. Yeah, no, I got all the Game of Thrones except for the most recent season.
Okay. I can push those up to you. BT Sync we got in it. It's working.
Yeah,
we talked about it last week.
BitTorrent Sync. Yeah, it's pretty cool. The only thing I would really like, this hard drive I'm going to take to my mom's house when it's done, install it on my dad's computer over there, and use it as my offsite backup for the 2 terabyte drive I have over in the media center. My only concern is it's not encrypted over there, and I don't care about my parents looking for stuff, but what if they get a virus, right? What if they get malware on their computer and, that stuff gets seen? So I think the one feature BT Sync needs is kind of a, don't let the person you're sharing with be able to decrypt it, right? Leave it on there as encrypted and, so I can give her a hard drive, put on her computer and not worry about bad programs on that computer reading my data.
I don't think that they want to put that on there because that opens up avenues for things like for malware itself, for people to drop it on people's computer and they don't know about it.
But the other computer has to put in the secret, right? I mean, it's not like you can...
Well, but you could, no, you could,
you could, you could install BT Sync, yeah, and you could have malware do that. Yeah, I guess I you can do a lot of bad things with a lot of programs, though. I think having, you know, because they have a read only type option of sharing, right? Like where I can push things out, give a bunch of people the read only thing, and it's kind of more like a BitTorrent distribution type thing, right? Even though it, but it copies the data, it's a push instead of a pull. They have that. So what they, I think, you know, I got to look through, they have a huge long thread about feature requests, and it's going to be impossible to really read through them all. There's probably a couple hundred, you know, things on the forum right now about feature requests. But I think at some point I would really like to see that feature, because then I wouldn't have to worry about malware on my mom's side looking at my, most of its media file, most of the big stuff's media files. Maybe I'll take my documents folder and I'll encrypt that and then just sync out the encrypted blob. That's probably what I'll end up doing.
Mm.
So I'll use, you know, something like TrueCrypt or something to encrypt the important documents and then just have that blob synced out to her thing. It's just a way, you know, I'm doing this just for listeners, I'm explaining, you know, offsite backups in case, you know, there's a fire or something like that. Yes, it's 700 gigabytes of media, and I really don't care so much about the media, but getting, it's cheap enough to do the sync, you know. I'm not paying to sync 700 gigs to Amazon or something. That would be absurd. Right. So now it's like, yeah, might as well back it up. Then I don't have to worry about recreating the media and then backing up the important documents, but not the media and stuff like that. Just back it all up, and hopefully I'll never need it. That's the plan. But yeah,
it's like insurance. Yep. Hopefully you never need it, but you still pay for it.
Yeah. So yeah, BitTorrent Sync. You can check that out. We talked about it last week, and it's a great way to, you know, share files between two of your computers or between you and a friend who just wants to swap files back and forth. The only downside is it's a push thing. So if Greg puts some files in his folder on his computer, it automatically gets copied to my computer and takes up hard drive space on my computer. So you really can't use it to like have Greg browse my library and choose what he wants to watch, right? Because it's just going to push everything. You would almost need like an index file that he can look at and say, hey, Jeff, give me this, this, and this, right? And then you drop those in the sender box. So that's how it would work, really. Different than like an FTP site where he could browse and pull what he wants.
Only really becomes efficient when it's when there are multiple people on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's when the swarming technology really becomes
efficient. Yeah, the swarm, because like it could pull a couple chunks from me, a couple chunks from someone else, and you know, really max out the bandwidth on doing, keeping the whole swarm synchronized. It can definitely be a pretty neat technology if you've got a group of people sharing or collaborating or doing things like that. You know, like say we did Craft Beer Radio remote, right? And we both recorded our own local sides. And like, you know, we just talked to each other over the telephone, but we wouldn't want that to be the public, right? We could put the files up. They'd all be synced. We could stitch them together. You know, it'd be good for those kinds of things. I think it's enough about BT Sync. Actually, that's all I got. Well, I wrote down Bluehost here. Talk about Bluehost shutting our site down last weekend. They sent me a notice about they found that if you have too many database tables or too big of a database, it impacts the whole server and you infect other customers. And I went and looked, and I had 2,100 MySQL tables on Bluehost.
That's a lot of tables.
It sounds like a lot, but like the Magento online store application that I have installed for someone I'm doing a website for, that's 250 tables all on its own. So you could only have 4 Magento instances installed, you know. So tables go fast. If you're writing your own database, 1,000's a lot.
Yeah.
When you're using one of these applications that has 250 tables on the base install, it doesn't last very far, right? So I had 2,100. I got this warning, and I thought I had more time than I did. So like last Sunday, they shut down the website. Last Saturday or last Sunday, they shut down the website. Sunday, I guess. So like in the evening, I'm going through, I'm looking at, I had a few, you know, test installs of Drupal that I could take off, but it got difficult. Like I had since taken down Allison and Max's Drupal sites because we weren't blogging on them, and it was hard to maintain and stuff. So like I had to like, I exported the SQL databases to a text file, and then I had to drop those databases. You know, it took a lot of work to figure out what I could drop, what I couldn't drop, and get us down. So I got us down to 941 tables, and
there you go.
And I called them, and they turned the account back on. But oh, so like seriously, you shut down my site. Oh, for tables that are just sitting there not being accessed, how does that hurt performance on the server? It doesn't. I know MySQL very well, and just having, I mean, if I had tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of tables, I could see where that could.
Well, they do. That's the thing.
Yeah,
they do.
They do. I guess. But they, you know, I still like Bluehost, but if you're planning on using one account with all their unlimited, you know, there's limits behind those unlimiteds, which most people will never hit. You can't have more than 500,000 files on a Bluehost account. That's a lot of files. We have about 9,000 files on my account right now.
500,000 is a lot of files.
If you're doing a photo album with, you know, like multiple sizes of the photos being saved and stuff like that, it gets eaten up pretty fast. It could get eaten up.
500,000? I don't think you realize how big that number is.
No, I know it's a big number, but you get... So
yeah, you said we have like 9,000
on
files.
My Flickr.
Do you realize how many orders of magnitude smaller that is?
My Flickr, I have 34,000 photos. You get those times a couple copies of thumbnails and medium and large. You know, then you're up to 150,000.
At that point, start paying for slightly more service because you're using.
Sure. But they say unlimited. I know. But we don't. We're not. Close to hitting any of the other.
I gotta defend Bluehost in this instance. I don't think that they're asking for anything irrational. 1,000 tables is a lot of tables. And yes, it can slow down when you're hosting 5 million websites. It can slow things down. So yeah, they want to knock it down to 1,000 tables. It's a reasonable amount of tables for what we pay.
Mm-hmm.
$6.95 a month, right? Something like that.
Right.
500,000 files. That's a lot of files.
It is a lot of files. And I'm glad we're not close to it yet, even though we do have a warning when you log into our account saying, you're using a lot of files and we could cause you to have your account deactivated.
If we have to, we'll find a new host. But I don't think that they're doing anything that could be considered objectionable. Based on what you told me.
No. As long as they don't have a problem with our number of files at around 10,000, I'll be fine. Especially since they're just static files sitting there.
Yeah. So I'm on Bluehost's side. Fuck you and your problems.
There'd be your problems too if we can't host CBR on Bluehost.
We'll find a way. Just like, you know, Dr. Malcolm says, life finds a way.
All right, let's go drink some beer.
All right. I wonder what this was.
That's some kind of diagram.
I know, but I'm wondering what it's about.